is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, the big impeachment story and the inquiry is rolling forward that has captivated most people who are, you know, watching this thing. Of course, a lot of Americans, keep in mind, people are paying no attention to what the buffoons in Washington are doing. So we always need to understand that as well. A lot of news around that impeachment story we're going to talk about today, as well as problems in Hong Kong that are really pushing. Xi Jinping came out and said some interesting things about that. China, a lot going on there. We're going to have a special discussion on the conflict and consequences of China and Hong Kong. And then the failed ruling class. Let's call them that. Not the deep state specifically, but the ruling class, right? The failed ruling class strike back, and that's what we're seeing with a lot of this impeachment. We'll do a deep dive on that later in the program here. Lot to the top stories here, and let's welcome on Ilana Friedman. Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator and host here at America Out Loud. She's an author of one of her recent books, Hamas, Care, and the Muslim Brotherhood, The Plot to Destroy America. That is available on the America Out Loud bookstore, as many, many books are from our experts and guests, and on Amazon. Joining us as well in the top stories is Politic Rick joins us here. He is the founder and CEO of Giant Slayers. Rick is he's a journalist. He's a truth warrior and a free speech extremist. You'll hear him more and more on the network, I'm sure, in the weeks and months ahead here. Okay, on the impeachment, there are four key facts I want to put out there that we seem to be getting out of all of this. And number one, the transcript of the phone call shows no discussion of conditionality at all. Number two, both Trump and Zelensky have said there was no pressure. Number three, Ukraine did not know the aid had not been released at the time of the call. And number four, the aid was indeed released. In fact, it was the Trump administration that released it when the Obama administration would not. And of course, the Obama administration sent pillows and blankets. Now, that didn't quite help them. What they needed was military equipment. But yet, that doesn't seem to suffice the opposition. Ilana, let's start right there, please. If you listen to these four key facts, you kind of shake your head and wondering what the impeachment inquiry is all about. So what is it about in your view?
Oh, I think it's just about political posturing. These people who are who call themselves Democrats, who are leading the opposition and what they call the resistance to Trump, are so overwhelmed by their hatred of this man that they will do anything and say anything. You know, first they called him on what they called collusion. And when that didn't work, they called it obstruction of justice. And when that didn't work, they called it quid pro quo. And when that didn't work, they called it extortion, and now they're calling it bribery. And the point is that they will do anything to get this man out of office. And the interesting thing about your four points before, that that Obama would not release aid to Ukraine when Ukraine was under attack by Russia. Russian tanks were coming into Ukraine and killing Ukrainians, and Obama still would not release any aid. But he did send blankets, and that was, you know, maybe kept some dead bodies warm.
Rick, let's bring you in on this. And I think probably the only real conclusion you can come up with, as Ilana was just saying, is they want Trump and they want him out of there by hook or by crook.
There's no question about that. Listening to Ambassador Yovanovitch yesterday, the thing that struck me was a four-question exchange with Devin Nunes. He asked her, were you involved in the July 25th call? No. Were you involved in the deliberations to pause military sales? No. Did you ever talk to the president? No. did you even talk to Nick Mulvaney? No. And his response is, I'm not exactly sure what the ambassador is doing here today. And we all know what she's doing there today. They spent a lot of time asking her questions about how she felt.
I want to play this quick clip from Nancy Pelosi because it plays to what you both are talking about right now. You'll find it most interesting.
Perhaps you have not heard me when I have said, this is something we're very, do with a heavy heart. This is very prayerful because impeaching is a divisive thing in our country. It's hard. And the place that our country is now, it's not a time where you go to 70% when President Nixon walked out of the White House. It wasn't there before he left. Even 2 weeks before he left, it wasn't there until the other shoe fell and he walked out the door.
Now, when you hear that clip I just played on Nancy Pelosi, Rick, and you see her reference to President Nixon, I think what you can see here, they're waiting for the shoe to drop. So what has been consistent through the last 3 years, they are always out in search of a crime. And they're doing that even with our next story. When we talk about the president's tax returns, we'll see the same thing. They're in search of a crime. But when that reference point, when Nancy Pelosi just talks about President Nixon and everything was good before 2 weeks before he walked the hell out of the White House, is it safe to say, Rick, that what they're waiting for and hoping for is they get Trump pushed over the edge enough that he will also walk out of the White House? That's what they're hoping for.
That's what they're hoping for. But notice how the way you laid that out was excellent. Is that what it points to is this is a matter of using language to persuade voters, not to provide truth, not to help them understand, but to try to tie President Trump to Nixon and all the feelings that are associated with that. That's why the attorneys and everybody else yesterday spent all kinds of time asking Ambassador Ivanovich about her feelings, you know?
Okay, I think there's a very important point that we need to not ignore, and that is that the Democrats seem to have a very loose relationship with the truth. Adam Schiff is an inveterate liar. He even lies when he's lying. For example, he said he didn't know who the whistleblower is, but then he warned the Republican that anyone who mentions his name will be in big trouble. But here's the question: if someone were to mention his name, how would Schiff know if he doesn't know who it is?
Yeah,
you know, he's lying, and he's lying about his lies, and this has been going on for a very long time. He said that he had incontrovertible evidence that Donald Trump was connected with the Russia hoax, and he had all kinds of evidence, but he never brought it forward because clearly he didn't have it.
The next tragedy is going to be that Donald Trump is in cahoots with the Martians, you see, the Martians, to take over. That's why we're going to visit the planet of Mars, you understand. That's the next one coming. If it wasn't so sad, what was happening to this republic right now, and everybody on this call knows that and everybody listening, this would be entirely comical. I mean, but you couldn't make this stuff up. And friends, if you bought a movie script to Hollywood and said, we want to produce a movie like this, you would just be laughed right off the edge. There's no way they would run this script. It is that ludicrous. Now let's move on and have more ludicrous in the top news. How's that? And that is Trump's tax returns. Because, you know, Ilana, if you can't get him one way or another, just keep pushing until, again, you can find out what exactly he did. And he must have done something in the last 50 years we can get him on to get him the hell out of office. Well, the Second Circuit Court in New York City rules that the tax returns must be turned over to state prosecutors. And they want to go back about a decade or so. And this is the grand jury now in New York, and they're investigating the circumstances surrounding that hush money. That's what this was all about, the payments made to the women and so on and so forth. Now, President Trump has asked the Supreme Court to block the tax returns. The lawyers went to Chief Justice John Roberts for an emergency delay to push that off so they can, you know, again, push this upward. What do you make of all this, Ilana, with the tax returns? The bottom line is, do they get the tax returns in the end, do you think? Or does this get to the Supreme Court and do they back this up with the president?
Anybody who has such complicated business affairs as Donald Trump is bound to have something in his tax returns that someone can latch onto and say, aha, okay, you see, we got him. But the truth is, first of all, there is no requirement for either a candidate or a sitting president to be forced to release his tax returns. So I don't understand the point of law that the circuit court rested its case on, but I think that the Supreme Court is going to likely give this a fair hearing, and we'll know whether they'll take the case. But this is something which I think this is a gotcha attack on the President of the United States, and it's one of those things that we've been talking about. If one thing doesn't work, another thing will work, and if we throw enough mud at the wall, and I'm being polite, then something will stick, and that's what they're hoping for. But yeah. I, you know, phooey.
Yeah, yeah. And I appreciate you being polite there, by the way. Okay, let's talk about Roger Stone a moment here. Rick, I want to ask you about this now. So Stone, I mean, this didn't surprise a lot of people, I don't believe, but he was guilty on all counts. These are what we call process crimes. So this is where, you know, we say to you, Rick, well, we think you committed murder, and you tell me you didn't do that or whatever the crime was, okay? And yet we then go through the process, and then there's some fudging along the way or manipulation or lying or whatever it is, because you're upset, maybe you're angry, you don't want to play with the system, and now we get you on those process crimes, and now we're going to lock you up for 50 years because of the process crimes. And by the way, Rick, President Trump tweeted out, I got to share this with you here. This is Rich. He says, and this is my sentiments exactly, but he says, so they now convict Roger Stone of lying and want to jail him for many years to come. Well, what about, now brace yourself, people, you know what's coming, Crooked Hillary, Comey, Strzok, Page, McCabe, Brennan, Clapper, Shifty Schiff, or Nellie Steele and all of the others, including even Mueller himself. Didn't they lie? And you would say what, Rick?
Well, I would say, Malcolm, bravo, you got the full list, all inclusive. I think that there's a couple issues here. One is this is just another indication of a two-tiered system, which if we're ever going to bring this country back together and have unity, there has to be a one-tier system. There has to be justice for that long litany of people that you just mentioned.
The question is, at the end of the day, do some of these people get pardoned? Ilana, real quickly, do you think some of these people at the end, when all this comes through, and probably would be after the 2020 election, do you think some of these people, like the Roger Stone, even the Paul Manafort for that matter, do they end up getting pardoned?
Well, I think they all got a raw deal through Mueller and others. I would hope that the president, when the time comes and when it's right, that he will pardon these guys because they have been railroaded, frankly. And, you know, it's interesting that Mueller, for example, was looking at that Russia, but he got Manafort on things that happened a long time ago that had nothing to do with Russia. So
that's exactly
this is not it's very not American.
All right, let's talk about, Ilana, the ethics probe for one of your favorite politicians, Representative Tlaib. You have an article on America Out Loud right now about this. So this is quite interesting. Clearly, her begging for money as she was running her campaign. What's the story on this?
Well, she applied to her campaign and said to them that she was, specifically, she said, quote, I am struggling financially now. I'm sinking. So I was thinking the campaign could loan me money. But Ryan, I guess that's her campaign manager, said that the committee could actually pay me. So I was thinking of a one-time payment of $5,000. And then, unquote. And then she actually upped the ante because she sent another email in the same month, but later on. She requested a cost of living stipend of up to $12,000 every 2 weeks. My gosh, I wish I got that. Beginning in May of that year, and Tlaib began to receive, are you ready? $2,000 several times a month. I mean, she actually got some of this money. And she also had a job at this time. And her campaign people told her she'd better get rid of the job because it's illegal for her to have the money from the camp, be using money from the campaign to operate and still have a job where she was earning money. So in any case, she ignored that advice. And so in the end, she got about $45,000 worth of funds, which were supposed to be for her campaign, but they were given to her and she used them for personal. The irony of all this is that this woman has been front and center accusing the president of corruption.
That's right. Yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. Ilana, well, let me stay with you just a moment here. And I want to talk about the unbelievable, this altercation in Israel in Gaza. The rockets that have been fired back and forth. I mean, we're talking, hundreds and hundreds of rockets. Last count I heard was over 500 rockets that have hit southern and central Israel. Okay, where's this thing going? What's going on with it?
This is interesting because this is not Hamas, who is usually at front and center with all of these attacks on Israel. This is the Palestine Islamic Jihad, the PIJ. And what started it all was that the PIJ was planning a massive attack on Israel, like we have seen. And they were ready to go. And so Israel did something quite extraordinary, I think. They took out the leader of the PIJ, but they did it by sending a rocket through, or a missile, I guess it was, a missile through his bedroom window. Wow. And it killed him and his wife without destroying any of the other buildings around him, or even, his building was left standing too, I understand. But the point is that this is what triggered this massive rocket attack against Israel. And the interesting thing is that this is what they were trying to avoid. But now that it's happened, Egypt has been working furiously to try to get some sort of a ceasefire, and they finally did it, and it lasted about, a few hours, nothing. And then they started sending rockets again. And a lot of the things that I feel are so really damaging in this kind of a situation is that they are sending these rockets into cities, into heavily populated areas. Sure. And these are civilians who are being attacked. This is not a war of soldiers against soldiers. These are soldiers or would-be soldiers fighting civilians and trying to harm them in the most effective way possible. So it's a bad situation. Where is it going? The interesting thing is Hamas is not participating in this for the most part.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So this is Hamas has the ability to clamp down on the PIJ. They haven't done it. Right. Don't know whether they will. But this could be the seeds of a new Gaza war.
Let's bring it back here, and I want to talk to you, Rick, about this another horrific shooting in a high school here, Santa Clarita, in the Los Angeles area there. This is in a high school, a shooter went in, 16-second attack that left a couple dead, in fact, himself included. He was put in the hospital, shot himself in the head, and he died as well, and then three wounded seriously. Bad situation. Again, we see these things fairly regularly. What's the story behind this one?
Well, there's a couple really important things associated with this that we should think about. But at first, our sympathies go out to the parents of the kids that were injured or killed. This is just a horrible situation. You'll notice that Dianne Feinstein in the left-wing gun lobby is not coming out and saying a word about this. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason being, he did it with a handgun. And, they would like to ban AR-15s.
Right.
So it shows you what can happen.
In
16 seconds, with a handgun, he killed two people, injured seriously three people. In a state that has some of the toughest gun laws that exist. So they don't want to talk about this because it demonstrates that, this may not be a gun issue. Where it leads us, and I think we as a country really, really, really badly need to address this, but we don't know for sure what the circumstances are with this young fella, but probably, there was some mental illness involved. And we got to figure out, what do we do? Because even in this case, I do believe in allowing teachers to have guns on site, but This happened in 16 seconds. There was no time for somebody with a gun to get there. Sure. So we've got to find a way to stop this before it ever happens in the first
place. That's it. Rick, that is so well said what you say there. I so appreciate that analysis because you just pointed out several things that people should get from this and why you're not hearing the political talk right now because you can't counterbalance that conversation that just had. It's hard to blame it on, you know, again, AR-15s or whatever, you know, when these things are going to happen.
Right.
They could do the same thing with a knife, Rick. I mean, in 16 seconds and kill a few people there too. And it is happening. So
and
the argument,
happened, sure.
Yeah, it's a bigger argument here. You're right. It's mental health. It's other factors involved very clearly. And that's well said. Big thank you here on the Top Stories to Politic, Rick, Ilana Friedman here. You know, one other interesting thing, people, in the Top Stories to tell you, while all this is going on, and you kind of hate the news in the way that it's always bad news. Never do you turn the news on and find out good things are happening. But with all of this going on, the Dow Industrials, the S&P, are experiencing record highs. Stock market gains are through the roof. And that's what's happened. So the economy is, I mean, it's crazy. It's flying high as ever. And that's a telltale sign of a president that will be reelected, amongst other reasons. The Fed comes out and says there's no recession in sight for 2020, which is really bad news for Bill Maher and the people he hangs out with, because he's been wishing for a recession for the American people. I just thought that was a little bit of good news and a little bit of a feedback for Bill Maher that you might enjoy, people. Listen, we're going to talk next about China, Hong Kong. It's a lot more about that impeachment stuff and a lot more viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Welcome back to Viewpoint. We've been talking a lot about China, and more than China, the connection to this also is Hong Kong. The conflict and consequences really over the last couple of months in Hong Kong, it's a major story. You've got to remember, people, a lot of these stories are being overshadowed with a lot of this domestic stuff we talked about up front in the Top Stories with the impeachment, a lot of the things here. A lot of these other big key stories are being overshadowed in a big way. Well, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, you remember the name, right? Well, he warns of catastrophic conflicts unless China and the United States settle their differences. Now, that caught my attention, that article, and it was something that was initially read in the South China Morning Post. He says this, one side cannot dominate the other, and they have to get used to that. Wow. And his warning was pretty straightforward, a dire warning there. Let's bring on and have a conversation about China, and we'll also discuss Hong Kong. But let's just get started here with Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist, a philosopher, patriot. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. I want to also tell you there is an outstanding read on the platform. I would be amiss to not tell you. And it is entitled, How Should the United States Deal with Rogue Nuclear States? You want to go read that, people. It's on the front page of America Out Loud today as you hear this. Also joining us here is Jim McKay. Jim is a political analyst, a commentator, radio producer here at America Out Loud. He has a 30-year background in global technology, telecommunications, and pharmaceuticals. Henry Kissinger. Well, I love the days. Kissinger, Nixon, remember those days? And so this story, as I read it, guys, caught my attention, and I want to read this to you now. Kissinger says, it will be worse than the world wars that ruined European civilization. And he talks about a war between China and the United States, and that it will be inevitable and result in a catastrophic outcome unless we abandon the idea of domination. And he said these two major countries in different parts of the universe are in similar positions and kind of need to get it together here. Dennis, what do you think about the statement and kind of an ominous report coming from Henry Kissinger here? And what do you take from it?
Oh, I completely agree with him. Kissinger is dead on about exactly what will happen if we don't grow up. And that's it's a warning to both of us. We both have to grow up. The United States and China, we've been living on bravado, right? But the fact of the matter is bravado gets you killed. I mean, there's billions of Chinese. There's millions of Americans. We have the two largest economies on the planet. We are now the equivalent of what the United States and the Soviet Union were during the Cold War. That's the U.S. and China in for the rest of this century.
Dennis, do you think China recognizes the seriousness of what Kissinger puts out there? And I say that because, you know, there's a lot of strategy and experts that have been speaking out really, like you said, since the decline of Russia and what's happened there. China has filled that vacuum and they're doing a lot of things. There's a lot of posturing and position happening worldwide with China. Do you think they recognize the seriousness of these statements that a Kissinger would make?
Yes, I think the Chinese government does. Just beneath the Chinese government in the infrastructure of the rest of Chinese politics, there's still a lot of bravado. China is a hyper-patriotic culture. Everybody there is trying to prove how much they love the mother country. And it's getting them into trouble in places around the world. And so that's their challenge, right? You know, where the U.S., we're kind of a cynical country. And so for us, our challenge is to get over the cynicism. Their challenge is to get over their hyper-patriotism. And both societies have to learn how to grow up beyond those adolescent stages. At the government level, yeah, they recognize you cannot sustain conflict like this around the world without eventually starting a world war.
Yeah, well, that is the question. Do they understand that, Jim? If we look ahead, let's say, I don't know, 20 years from now, right? And we think about China in the terms of what's happening here, as Dennis was just saying, the kind of the treks they're laying down and a lot of these mouse traps that are put all over the place here for conflict. Now, Donald Trump recognized this because he tried to create a very strong personal-to-personal relationship with Xi Jinping, who's been, you know, if he keeps it together there, could be the president for life, so they say. Do you see us avoiding conflict with China over the next 20 some odd years, or are we headed down a wrong path here with them?
I think that the problem is that China has two factions. Ping represents the more modern individuals, the party that's moving around the world, getting involved in South America, Africa, everything economically. He's a kind of a dynamic guy in that sense, and he's leading the country in that direction. The hardliners, the people that have been in charge of China for, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years, something like that, still have this fear of everybody. That's why they have a 4 million man army. That's why they're building up a global navy and modern weaponry.
They don't trust the United States is what you're saying.
Exactly. I mean, and you look what happened to them in World War II. Even though China was a very strong ally of the United States in World War II. But the Japanese did atrocities to China. They are scared of anything like that ever happening again.
So and China doesn't forget this stuff either, is what you're saying. I mean, historically, they're real good at looking at the past and really determining where the future is going to be. You know, Jim, one other thing here. There's something also interesting about China I want to point out to folks and have you opine on, and that is what's different about China is, yeah, they're a communist nation in many ways, but yet they have really, in very other odd ways, you just mentioned the way they're pivoting around the world, they sort of are a capitalist society, and it's kind of a weird setup as a communist country, isn't it?
Definitely, but they have a very strong entrepreneurial spirit, the people in China. They're very hardworking.
Exactly.
You know, they started off copying our technology, and now they're inventing new technology.
Yeah, like killer robots and stuff and drones, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Their education system is so tied to the economy. Ours is, you know, we graduate, you know, our college kids come out, 50% of them can't get jobs because what they're studying in college is totally irrelevant to the world. Mm-hmm. And China, technology leader in the world today in terms of just about everything, because they send their kids to the United States and get them educated in the right courses.
Yeah.
Then they return home. Yeah. You know, looking into the future, whether we would have a global nuclear holocaust is what catastrophic and almost end of the world scenario, as Kissinger is saying, is very touchy. During the Cold War, the United States and the Soviet Union had these proxy wars where there was hot fighting going on, and Vietnam was that for 10 years. And it kind of is a venting of the of hostilities. And Kissinger even was very part of that thought process. Okay. As long as we're fighting someplace, you're not going to have a global catastrophe.
Listen, the conflict that China is having right now, Xi Jinping with Hong Kong, is monumental. We're seeing things right now that could alter a lot of the conversation we just had, could be altered with some of these, well, how do you say, very area, regional type conflicts that get out of hand real fast. One of them, I mean, you can speak about a lot of things, South China Seas, Taiwan, you can come down the litany list, but let's go right to Hong Kong. Xi Jinping comes out and he demands an end to violence. Now, I haven't heard the word demand in Hong Kong with Xi. He's been very, very gentle, or tried to be, and they've kept their military at arm's length, although they have, you know, infiltrators and spies all throughout that and throughout Hong Kong, clearly. I mean, they know what they're doing there, or do they, as the question. So he demands an end to the violence. Well, what happened is there was a second person that was killed, a protester. It's getting very ugly is what's happening. You're seeing a lot more violence. You're seeing there's a lot more persistence on the streets. And at the same time, the Hong Kong economy, like everybody knew this was going to happen, they're entering a recession. And this is their diamond in the rough, Hong Kong is, for China. What do you think, Dennis? I mean, economically, China can't be happy, but they're also losing their grip. What happens here in Hong Kong?
You really look at Xi Jinping and what he's doing there. He's like, he desperately does not want to have a Tiananmen Square repeat on his watch, right? So he's being super gentle. Even their army, when they come out of their garrisons in Hong Kong, they come out in t-shirts and shorts, right? They don't come out in full gear and you know, with like orange buckets, right? Picking up rocks.
That's interesting you said that. So you're saying they're being very careful with the optics, huh?
Yes, they're being very careful. On the other side, the Hong Kong administrators, Lam and the Hong Kong Police Department, they're becoming more and more harsh over time. Lam just called all the protesters enemies of the public. Hong Kong PD now refers to the protesters as cockroaches. So Xi Jinping, I think, is worried that the Hong Kong situation is beginning to spin out of control to the point that things will explode in a way that he has to intervene. And he's basically trying to get both sides to calm down. Yeah. He's not succeeding because it's just, I mean, these people are amped and they're living on their own endorphins and their own adrenaline at this point. He may need to intercede.
Well, and that's what we've been waiting for, to see if the other shoe drops out there. And Jim, back to what Dennis is saying there, I think that it is safe to say, probably, that Xi Jinping is the one that is forcing Cam and other Hong Kong diplomats there to crack down on this. I am sure, or I believe he is anyway, squeezing them to take control of the situation, or he will.
The big problem, and the reason he's using such I'll call it a light hand in Hong Kong, is Hong Kong represents modern China. 30 years ago, it was the only entry point for commerce. Today, you go 50 miles up the Pearl River to Guangzhou in some of the other cities that didn't exist 35 years ago. They were little hamlets. They're now population centers of 5 and 6 million people. They're very modern. China has a middle class of 350 million people that are involved in industry, commerce, technology. He doesn't want what's going on in Hong Kong to spread to the rest of the country. The demands for a more democratic representation in government, mm-hmm. a lighter hand. Yet at the same time, if you visit these cities, there's people driving Lexus and Mercedes and BMWs, the shopping malls. You would think you're in the middle of Los Angeles or something. His big problem is if he cracks down hard in Hong Kong, and people today in China have families in Hong Kong, relatives in the other cities that communicate, it's a very different society than it was 35 years ago.
All right, I want to talk to you next about this story that I seen from Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, that caught my eye in a big way because it is a truly fascinating story, but could be have horrific consequences here. And these are these killer robots and drones that we talked about, innovation technology and what China is up to. And so they've advanced these markets. There's a lot more going on in the AI world than most everybody recognizes or has any inclination of. When we talk about this, people usually their eyes gloss over, like, okay, yeah, someday. Well, someday is going to come real quick, I can tell you that now. And this story is most fascinating. They're exporting drones now, China is, to the Middle East. We're talking some serious equipment here that could have major ramifications. Jim, this is more than just a tank. It's more than just a few guns. It's more than just, you know, some casual little weapon. These are automated drones and robots that could do serious, serious killing on the battlefield. And they are now selling these things to Middle East countries. What could possibly go wrong with that, Jim McKay?
Well, as with any weapon system or advanced technology thing, something can and will go wrong. These weapons are what they call autonomously operated. They have software in them that has everything from facial recognition to object recognition, and they're armed with machine guns or other weapons that can pick out an individual, pick out a group, and autonomously kill them. Mm-hmm. They're killing machines that operate without human intervention. That is really scary. I mean, that's like something that maybe they saw Star Wars a few times and they said, this is a good idea. We're going to bring this to the battlefield. Tremendously dangerous. And especially in cultures in the Middle East where the value of life is not what
there is no value of life is exactly that. And it's a culture that they kill for sport and they kill because they think it's their version of, meeting the virgins up in Allah's heaven somewhere. So this is not the group you want to be giving these kinds of weapons to. Dennis Santiago, I got to tell you, this story, you and I have talked about this off mic. The people in these companies in China who are selling this equipment, and I assume the Chinese government is involved in this or certainly knows about it. What is their ultimate means to measure the success of this? Is this strictly a capitalist move to make money?
A lot of people don't understand this and because they don't watch what's going on here. The war in Yemen is a drone war. It is, the sky is filled with drones now. Okay, the Houthis have these drones that they're called UAVXs because they're not quite, they're not completely identified. They have 900 mile ranges. They run 150 miles an hour. They're armed. They can, the Houthis can launch them. That means they've got a range to reach Riyadh. Okay, the people that are actually buying these Chinese drones are the Saudis. They're buying them because they need to defend territory. And they don't have a large army, so they're buying systems that have AI enhancement to them so they can send them out on patrols, okay, armed patrols in this case, instead of sending out soldiers. Now, when you really look at that, I'm a military analyst. I look at all this stuff from the point of view of what's the necessity and what is going on here. There is a drone war of two sides with these machines. It already looks like Terminator over there. I mean, that's the reality, okay? Wow. And a lot of people in the United States don't understand that, and they should. All right. And what is happening here is the Chinese are filling a market for drones that are, they're automated patrol drones that have what in the US they call unethical AI because they're allowed to operate autonomously and they're allowed to kill autonomously. In the US, our rule is there has to be a human governability in the systems. All right. And that means the Saudis look around and they need to have patrol systems that are out there that are watching their perimeter. They are trying to invest in anti-drone technology and all that kind of stuff. You know, they're going to be buying Russian T-14 Armatas because it's the only tank that actually has an anti-drone gun on it. All right. That kind of stuff is happening now. The problem for the Saudis is they're looking around for these systems and they look at the United States. We got nothing to sell them because we don't make this stuff. The Chinese do, and they're filling a market. And that's what's really going on.
Wow.
I would not want to be a human soldier on a battlefield 20 years from now.
No, and bottom line is this equipment we're talking about will change the scenario and could change the power structure in the Middle East.
Yes. Oh, I think it'll change the power structure all over the planet.
More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
You heard of the Empire Strikes Back? Well, this is the failed ruling class strike back is what we're going to get into next year. And I got an interesting clip I want to play for you in a moment here. Let's bring on first here two extraordinary voices, Ava Armstrong. Ava's a political commentator, radio personality, and a best-selling author here at America Out Loud. Her books are on the bookstore at America Out Loud or on Amazon as well. Now, that bookstore, you can get the link right on the navigation bar at AmericaOutLoud.com, and you'll find extraordinary books there from extraordinary people that are on our network that are both guests and are experts alike. Also, let's bring on Del Wilber. Dell is a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism officer. Dell is a great voice, weekly columnist here on the platform. Excited to have both Ava and Dell here. All right. So we've been watching, I know both of you have, and many of you guys, you out there, you listen to parts of these impeachment testimonies here and the inquiry that's been going on. Many people would call it a carnival in Washington there. So there's an interesting, when you think about all of the testimony back and forth, and so far with the three witnesses that have been called, there'll be more in the next week here. But I've got an interesting summary I want to play for you next to get, you can hear some of the representatives on audio here, but just get a sense of how much these witnesses were really not involved in the direct problem here, and there's such a lack of evidence, but yet they continue forward. Listen to this, please.
Are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call? Shout it out. Anyone?
Do you have any information regarding any criminal activity that the President of the United States has been involved with at all?
No.
Were you involved in the July 25th Trump-Zelensky phone call or preparations for the call?
No, I was not.
You didn't listen on President Trump's call and President Zelensky's call?
I did not.
Neither of you were on this call. Is that right, Mr. Kent?
That's correct.
And you were neither as well?
You never met the president?
That's correct.
Did you ever talk to President Trump in 2019?
No, I have not.
You have not had any contact with the President of the United States. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Ms. Taylor, Mr. Kent, have you had any contact with the President of the United States?
I have not.
Dell, let me have you start the conversation off here. What's really odd about this is you're not getting direct testimony. You're not getting like, I was there, I know what happened. It's all sort of hearsay. How do you have a case like this and impeaching a president, something so serious, and it's all just second, third, fifth-hand conversation?
Well, I mean, it's a clown show, but let me say this. The opening remarks the Ambassador Yovanovitch gave, as well as the description of the the careers of the others that were interviewed recently, the opening remarks I thought were very telling, because Ambassador Yovanovitch said that she had been a career Foreign Service officer for over 30 years. That right there, to me, says it all. First of all, President Trump doesn't give a damn what career Foreign Service officers have been doing for the last 30 years. He's looking to change direction in this country, and let's start doing things differently, because the last 30 years, it hasn't worked.
Boy, that is a fantastic point out of the gate, Dale. And what we're speaking about here is these are, again, the entrenched government officials, let's call them, bureaucrats, I guess is another good word. And they're,
the political,
as you say,
and government elites.
Yeah, elites, okay, yeah. And they're entrenched in the system is what's happening. But, you know, what the left really does often, quite frequently, in fact, is they play on emotions, Dell. And they play to the emotional point, and that's where the whole political, class conversation comes from. You stepped on my toes. I don't like it, you SOB. Move the hell out of the way. We all get a little nasty then. We tell each other off. And there's a lot of that there, because people, they're worried about this, sensitivity. In fact, don't they have safe spaces and sensitivity classes on the left now? They offer at random now? Isn't that the case, Dell?
Well, I mean, it would seem that that's a requirement for any type of government service. I recall I went through years and years ago, I went through the Foreign Service Institute, where basically, because I was going to be going overseas in a cover position with State Department, and I had to attend the class as all new Foreign Service officers do, and basically they teach you how to hold your teacup, how to walk and talk and shake hands and be a good dutiful little Foreign Service officer. And you know, the truth of the matter is these people live in a make-believe world, really. And, it's those of us who are overseas getting our hands dirty and trying to, and I'm not denigrating all Foreign Service officers, because certainly they serve a useful purpose, but they do live in something of a bubble, and they, many of them had a tendency to look down their noses at anyone who wasn't a State Department employee, including CIA officers overseas. So, I have, I guess, maybe a little bit different perspective on this charade that's taking place right now.
Well, they certainly teach them how to be politically correct within all of that, too, and what not to say and what to say here. Ava, back to the U.S. ambassador here, who they had up there as the third witness in this impeachment inquiry. She was removed from all of the information on hand. It seemed like an entire waste of time for the day. But again, as you follow that testimony, they played on the emotional piece of this. And, she wasn't, they said she was fired, but she really, the term they used is she was really recalled, wasn't she? I mean, that happens a lot.
Exactly. She was recalled from her, and she's still being paid, by the way. I want you to know that.
Not a bad gig, not a bad gig.
No, not a bad gig at all. And she had 33 years of service, and I think that's pretty darn good. She should call that a day and say, thank you and be very gracious about it. But no, we are not in any normal situation here. It's historical, as you said, Malcolm. And I also find it hysterical. And this is a show about nothing. What Adam Schiff is doing, it's a show about nothing. It's like the Jerry Seinfeld show was a show about
nothing.
That
was a big hit, by the way.
That was a big hit. It was.
I don't know if this one is or not, but let's talk about Schiff a moment. Shifty Schiff, as they call him. Now, he sits up there. I got to tell you, for the first time ever, we've had a chairman of one of these congressional hearings. We're off. He's worn off the wood on the end of the gavel there. You see that, Ava, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, he is like the little emperor that could. He's up there banging that gavel. You will not. And he's coming. And the way he cut off again, the representative Stefanik, yeah, Representative Stefanik. Boy, she's made quite a splash there, hasn't she?
She's very, very good, and she would not sit there quietly and let him do that. Yeah, he's getting a very bad image. That's all I can say.
No, she's feisty, Ava. How do we get a dozen more like her? Do you know?
There are many coming. Believe me.
Oh, please send them my way, because I love the lady. I think she's outstanding. And she wasn't going to have anything of it. And she pushed back on him and called him out. She did not step off. How does this all impact Schiff?
Schiff is trying to make this sound intimidating, that this ambassador is going to go through some things. She's going to go through some things. I mean, those were the words that were like the damning words of President Trump. It's like Obama, when he came into office, he fired all ambassadors.
That's right.
He even gave them notice up front before he was even sworn in. And Schiff also colluded with witnesses, and that's witness tampering. And I don't know how the hell this guy gets away with
it. Well, the question now is, will that flush out? Dell, back to the, Ava says the witness tampering there. And the point of that is, and you see, the GOP is trying to flush that out. So far, Shifty Shift has tried to avoid that line. He says now, and he's changed his mind a few times, and of course, I referenced the President Trump earlier in the program, calling out them about lying when they're all lying. In other words, when they locked up Stone here about lying, that seems to be a regular daily event for these clowns here, Dell. And the Schiff has changed his testimony a few times now. Do you think that flushes out at all? Will he be caught in this witness tampering at all, or does he get away with it?
Well, no, because the Democrats control Congress, so nothing will happen to him. You know, in order for something to happen to him, the Republicans would have to take control of Congress, and then they would have to initiate some sort of ethics probe or whatever to try to impact him in some way. The one thing that I'll say, we talked about, Representative Stefanik, and the one thing I'll say is the difference between Republicans and Democrats is I really doubt we're going to see any naked photographs of any Republicans smoking dope and carousing around on the internet. So that's the big difference right there. You know, we've got clowns in the Democrat Party, and we've got thoughtful and people who are there to serve their constituency and to serve America. And,
Dale, how dare you? That is not a politically correct thing to say at all. What the hell's the matter with you?
Yeah. Hey, shove it.
Has the government devolved into fiefdoms? Does the federal government employ? Does anybody know that answer?
Hold on. Let me play the clock there for you before you answer that, Dale. Dun 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 dun.
Is this the final Jeopardy question?
Exactly. Go answer. And your answer is?
Yeah, too many.
Yes.
That's the short answer. But yes, to answer your question, yes, there are fiefdoms, and it has been that way for forever. Mm-hmm. But in since the Trump administration has taken office, they have never felt so threatened as they do right now, because they see their little power base, their little fiefdom, their little club, if you will, is being threatened by someone who's coming in and saying, listen, we've got to tear things down and rebuild it because it has gotten so out of whack. You've got it in the military. You've got it in the CIA. You've got it in the State Department, where people have done things the same way for decades. And you've got a president now who's saying, we're going to try to do it differently and see if that works better. And so far, in my opinion anyway, it has worked better. And that threatens them because they only know one way, and that's the way they've been doing it for decades. The root of this problem goes back to one individual, and that is Barack Obama. You know, there has not been really a problem when new administrations have taken over in the past. You know, they insert their own people into senior positions and cabinet positions and that. But when Trump took office, I mean, even before he took office, there was a effort underway to undermine his presidency. And it included, you know, that effort included people who had worked for Obama, had held senior positions with Obama, and they were guiding this. I mean, I am convinced it is a coup d'etat that has been taking place. It's an ongoing coup d'etat that has been taking place against President Trump and his administration.
Well, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. And it's not being hit. Dale, listen to me. They're not hiding it. So it's an open coup. There's nothing being hidden about this. It's out in the public square.
They don't have to hide it.
Well, they're not.
Have to hide it because they've got the news media in.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. I think this thing has been building for decades, Dell.
Actually, Eisenhower talked about the deep industrial state. 100%. And the danger. 100%. And the danger. He gave a great speech about this. And also, we should also mention this particular ambassador we're discussing here, Yovanovitch or whatever her name is.
No, that's it.
She supported the prior president, who was corrupt in Ukraine. She gave a list of people not to be prosecuted to Sondland, to Ambassador Sondland.
And yet they said she was the best one about corruption. That's what Schiff said. She was the one that was outspoken about it. And that doesn't measure. Doesn't connect.
I think when the truth comes out about this, yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be big. I really do.
When you hear Dell talk about, again, the puppet master, we're talking about Obama. I did a very interesting program with Colonel Jim Warsha on the puppet master, Barack Obama. And by the way, that has just today been released on podcast. So you will see it today on Sunday, on Viewpoint this Sunday, and you'll see it on the front page of America Out Loud, Barack Obama, the puppet master. And it gets into a lot of this Deep State Talks, a very interesting program. I encourage you to listen to that. Pour yourself a cocktail and sit down and listen to Colonel Jim Warshak and yours truly go after this entrenched deep state. It's a hell of a program here. Back to the puppet master and what Obama was up to. Ava, back to the point of Del Wilbur putting out there. Now, let me say this. Horowitz, John Durham. There's a lot of talk now. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. I've also heard reports. There are others in the intelligence agencies trying to hold those back because they realize timing is everything. And if those come out at the wrong time, they could derail this impeached Trump out of office circus affair. So the question is, will those be the game changer? Because you and I both know, Ava, we heard over the past couple of years, his other reports that were going to come out from Horowitz were sort of a dud. You know, it was supposed to be a big bomb and they failed. Do you have confidence right now that those reports will be a game changer, Ava?
I have very little confidence, to be honest with you.
That's what I thought.
I really do. I'm a very jaded person. I just wanted to mention that why I think that Schiff is trying to gin these hearings up. He's trying to make them very dramatic.
The timing on this is very interesting because if that happens, why all the Iowa is going on, the Democratic caucuses are happening, the candidates are out there, that's going to be all cut off at the knees if we're having a Senate trial. Does it get to the Senate, Dell?
You know, I'm not sure that it's going to get to the Senate because I think Nancy Pelosi is reading the tea leaves. And, you know, I think they're going to try to do something, but whether they actually move forward with an impeachment trial, I'm not convinced it's going to happen. For one thing, the Senate has to even take it up. They can refuse to even take it up based on evidence. So.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So now the question becomes, what does Senate leader Mitch McConnell do? Does he not take it up or does he take it up? Because I got to tell you right now, we've had great stories and reports on the platform here that people are looking forward to a Senate trial, actually. They want to see, and this is going to be, by the way, people, a moment of truth for Mitch McConnell. You're either going to see that he's part of the apparatus, because many of us do know he is part of this deep state apparatus. Does he show true American colors, or does he become part of the resistance? That is a fundamental question. We're probably going to get the answer to that very quickly. But there are others who have ordered extra popcorn in because they are waiting to see a Senate trial. Because you see, at that point, you can subpoena all of these cats that have been refusing to talk in front of America. And you could have, my friends, if Mitch McConnell wants to do it, you want to drain a swamp here? He could play that trial out from here right past the 2020 election. Big thank you here, Ava Armstrong, Del Wilbur, and all of the folks here on Viewpoint this Sunday. It's time, people, to get involved and get loud.